Hello and welcome to Series 3, Episode 5 of Behind the Microphone with me, Hamish Percy. Today's guest is the wonderful Kelly Cates. Kelly is one of the very best sports presenters in the business and is certainly a well-known and much-loved face. In this episode, Kelly shares loads of tips and tricks to becoming a successful sports presenter, as well as sharing her career so far, starting out at then brand new Sky Sports News before progressing through her career to work for companies such as TalkSport, the BBC, Premier League Productions, and of course hosting Premier League games for Sky Sports. I hope you enjoy the episode. So Kelly, when did you decide a career in sports media was for you?
Very, very late on. I think I probably didn't really think of it as an option. I thought it was something for other people. But obviously I'd grown up in a football family and I'd always been interested. And then when I was about to leave university, Sky Sports News were just launching. So they took on... This is, I think, a theme we'll come back to, but the timing was just brilliant. And they were setting up this brand new television channel that was going to run 24 hours a day. And everybody kind of rolled their eyes and thought, there's no way there's going to be 24 hours of sports news. They're never going to fill this channel. And they just got lots of people who were fresh out of university and really enthusiastic and absolutely clueless and just sort of trained us up on the spot. It wasn't, you know, about getting people, there were sort of older people overseeing it and more experienced people overseeing it. But really, they just let a load of early 20-somethings loose in a studio and we made 24 hours of television 7 days a week.
And how was that experience then at Sky Sports News in your early kind of years in the industry? How did you progress and learn? Yeah, tell me about that.
Terrifying at first. And I think the first thing I had to learn was just not to be terrified, you know, just to kind of sit there and think, it's actually all okay. And that was almost my sort of mantra, was just sitting down and going, it's okay. This is because it feels like the biggest thing in the world. But really, you know, particularly for us at that time, we were broadcasting to the building because nobody had the right shape satellite dish to be able to see Sky Sports News at the time. It was that long ago. And they were just selling this new version of it at Christmas. And we went on air in, I think, the September. And that the first thing was just to sort of relax and realize it doesn't matter. You know, if something goes wrong, and I remember it was Philip Schofield years ago, pre-This Morning, used to do children's television, and he used to do it from this tiny cupboard at the BBC. And I remember him being in an interview in some magazine and saying, the worst thing you can do is appear like you're not in control and that you're nervous, because the viewer picks up on that. So even if, and for some reason that stuck with me all the way through my life, weirdly. And I just always would remember that. I was like, as long as I'm relaxed, if things go wrong, then people watching will feel relaxed and then it doesn't matter so much. So they were kind of the first two lessons that I sort of took on board. And then after that, it was just a case of, I mean, at first it's just, oh my God, get off air without anything going wrong. And then after that, it's learning little bits from everything that you do and learning how all the different things that you do are different and require a different set of skills, and knowing which skills to put in place when, I think.
So that initial break then at Sky, if we had to relate that back to aspiring sports broadcasters, as you said, it was great timing. But for someone trying to get their break, how would they go about that?
Yeah, but I think that question of timing is the one that will stick with you all the way through your career. That hasn't gone away just because I've been doing it for much longer now. It's still a question of timing. You don't get your opportunity unless that door opens. So in the meantime, you just have to keep taking every opportunity that comes your way. And the thing is, at that time, Sky Sports News wasn't what it is today, which is a kind of established channel. it was brand new. It was a brand new concept. It was basically teletext with pictures. And it was seen as something that was really risky, which is why they got lots of young and experienced people in to do it. But I also, you know, so it was a risk, but it was also a door and it opened and I jumped through it. And then, you know, at other times I've worked on shows and for companies that I wouldn't necessarily have worked for or thought that's where I want my career to go, but they were available at that time and they've gone on to lead to stuff that I've really loved doing. And people will say, oh, I heard a bit of this, or I saw a little bit of that, and I thought maybe that was the, you know, that that's kind of it's been a really staggered, it's not been a straight line, it's not even been a wiggly line, it's been all over the place, it's been like a whole scattergun approach. But I think that's really helpful, because I think the more different types of experience you can get, the better. And working at stuff that isn't necessarily your first, second, third, fourth, or even fifth choice is really good for you, because you're always learning skills. It's always really helpful. And the other thing I would say to that as well is, when you do get that opportunity, which is what I didn't do at the beginning of my career, and I've got a bit better at doing later on, is nobody knows what you want to do. They're not mind readers. You know, this isn't a Hollywood movie. Nobody's going to come along and spot you and pluck you out of obscurity and say, I know that you've been doing X, Y, and Z, and we think you're amazing. What they'll do is, if they like you and if you're put in front of them, they will go back and look at your work. But it's very, very, very rare that somebody's going to say, it's you. You're the person I'm going to shine the spotlight on. So, you know, as well as opening doors, knock on doors as well. And let everybody that you work with know what you want to do and talk to them and be friendly and be, because when we worked together, that was the thing. You were always kind of chatting and, you know, because everybody, but people know who you are. And it's, and so when you say, oh, I'm doing a podcast, it's like, oh, that's great. What, and people are saying, well, what can we do? How can we help? Because they know you. Whereas if you were a stranger and you just came in silently and sort of went, hi, morning, and, you know, nobody would, and then suddenly out of the blue went, come on my podcast. Everybody'd be like, who is it? Who is this guy? Who is this kind of, so it really, all those kind of skills that are social skills that are just broadly for life, I think are helpful. Things like turning up on time and doing your job well and doing it really thoroughly are, you know, skills that work in every situation. And telling people what your ambitions are and what you want to do, but also being flexible within those ambitions is really helpful as well.
Yeah, and I think with me, Kelly, though, it was making a good cup of tea, I think, helps as well. But
it sounds like a cliche, doesn't it? You know, it sounds like you kind of all come and, you know, and I started out and making the tea, and we've all kind of done that. We've all sort of been at that stage, but it's just about doing things well and being nice to be around and talking to people and being open and friendly. And that, honestly, that gets you as far as pretty much anything else that you do.
And another thing I feel like you were kind of really emphasizing as well in that last answer was kind of the importance of saying yes. Like, as you said, that Sky Sports News opportunity, yes, we think of Sky Sports News now, but as you said back then, it was a bit of a risk, and it was a 24-hour news company. And is that a bit of advice you would say? Just say yes to opportunities, whatever they are, as you said, first, second, third, fourth, fifth choice.
Yeah. And like I say, that isn't just at the beginning of my career with the first choices. Sort of later on, I think when I had a bit of sort of downtime while I had my daughters, and I started back at Radio 5 doing 606, doing the phone-in show. And I always thought I wouldn't be good at a phone-in show. I don't think it's suited to me. I don't think I'd enjoy it. And I went, and I think Righty and I did it for 4 years. And I think it was his first job back on the BBC, having left years previously. And I mean, his career is just phenomenal since then, but it just worked really well for both of us. And particularly at the beginning, we absolutely loved doing it. And I think it came as a bit of a surprise to both of us because we made it something that suited us at the beginning. So it's not just about at those kind of crucial points saying yes to opportunities. It's about being really open-minded about what everything is at each stage.
Okay, that's another sound bit of advice. But I want to also touch on what you said about Philip Schofield and kind of relaxing and not being nervous. And because that's something that, in my opinion, when you're on air, you're relaxed. And I've heard you actually say in my research, you said that you want your pundits and guests to feel relaxed on air. But to switch it a little bit, when you're on air and you are, as I think, relaxed, how have you come to be like that? Is that sort of style you've looked for, or has it just been something that has evolved?
I think there's two parts to that. The first one is that I think sports broadcasting has changed. I think partly because of the increase in podcasts, before that sort of YouTubers and that kind of thing, I think that style has become more conversational. And so that's what people have grown up wanting. I think that's probably naturally my way anyway. And so I needed to learn the discipline of it. Whereas I think other people are very sort of disciplined and methodical in their approach. And they maybe have to work on being a bit more conversational. But I think you can marry those two things up. You can be really precise about what you want to do, but do it in a more relaxed way. So I think somebody I worked with years ago said that to me. They said it's not about having a conversation. It's about having a conversational tone, which is a very different thing. It's not a sort of chaotic, this could go anywhere. There is a structure to it, but you can do that in a relaxed and conversational way. I think that's something that's just how I talk and how I sort of broadcast. And I think it's something that has come into fashion now that may change or that may move around, or you just don't know how it's going to change in terms of what people want to watch. But there was another point to that, which I've completely forgotten because I've gone off on a complete tangent with that, which is about actually being relaxed. And that only comes in terms of how you feel inside. That only comes from being experienced. That you just will. If you're not experienced, you will be nervous. And same for me, if I do something I haven't done before, I will be really nervous. I've got to do something tomorrow, which is not even necessarily a difficult thing, but it's somewhere I haven't been before, someone I haven't worked with before. And I'm nervous. I'm already thinking, oh God, this is, and no matter how much I say to myself, this is really well prepared, it's really well planned, there's nothing really that can go wrong, it's really low key, it's fine, it's still there because I don't know what to expect. And I think that's where a lot of the nerves come from, is not knowing what to expect. And so for me, the best way to deal with that is to be really well prepared and to plan. That's how I deal with nerves. For other people, it might be something different. But everybody knows themselves what kind of makes them feel more secure in a situation. And that's the thing for me, is just to be really well prepared, I think.
Okay, and how do you, because I know you've, it's not just football you've done your beach soccer, you've done your sailing. How have you prepared for sports that, I might be assuming here, but like, how do you prepare for sports that perhaps you don't know as much about? You're about to say you're a massive sailing and beach soccer fan from birth, are you?
No, it's absolutely not what I was going to, no, the beach soccer, and then you do as much prep as you can, and it's not something that was a lot of information around about, and then you think, that's fine, it's just going to be beachy, and it's going to be so relaxed, and that's where you go in, and you think, oh, that was a mistake, because again, the approach can be relaxed, but you can't be relaxed about doing your job in that same way. And I think I managed to upset Eric Cantona by being a little bit too relaxed about it, in that he just sort of looked at me with disdain, as though to say, this is terribly important to me and you're being very frivolous. But the sailing, you're right, I knew nothing about it. And Sky knew when they offered me the job that I didn't know anything about it. And I said, well, what do you want me to do? And their approach at the time was, we assume that your audience is not going to know loads about sailing. So what we want you to do is always be one step ahead of the audience. So it was about, we were really lucky because we went over and covered the early stages of the sort of pre-tournament stages. And we got to know people. So we were in when it was quite quiet and we had quite a lot of access. So we made friends and we just talked to people. We just talked to people inside the sport. And if you work on something that you haven't worked on before, most sports, the people who are enthusiastic about them aren't gatekeepers. They want to spread the word. They want to tell you about them. And that's the best thing. My friend, Jill Douglas, she's been working on cycling for a long, long time now and is like fully immersed in that world. But I remember when she first started and she talked about the importance of going and speaking to the really venerable cycling writers and learning from them and, you know, kind of having a coffee with them and saying, you know what, because people want to tell you and they want to talk about their sport that they're interested in and they want to promote it. So, and they don't want to feel that you've gone in and you're just kind of, yeah, this is just a step on the way for me. And it's not, you know, it's not a huge deal to me. They want to know that you're as enthusiastic about it as they are. And as soon as they know that, you'll find that people are really, really helpful.
Okay. And does that I feel like that goes back to what we talked about at the start, even about just talking to people. When you get into the industry, just talking to people, being polite, being a normal, nice person. Does that relate to that when you go into new sports, do you think?
Yeah, and I think it's even broader than that. I think it's just a life skill. You know, go into a situation, ask people questions and be interested in them and interested in their life and their world, and you'll get a really good response from them. So I think it works in a work environment, but it works everywhere.
And maybe if we move back to your styles then, as you said, in that beach soccer one, maybe you were too relaxed. And I imagine this relaxed style that I kind of talked about, or we just talked about, how have you basically, this is a very long-winded, poorly worded question, but I'll get there.
Yeah.
I'm no stranger to those.
I have plenty of those.
Basically, what I'm trying to say is, how have you adapted styles throughout your career? For example, I'm trying to say Sky Sports News wasn't very relaxed, conversational.
Yeah.
Kelly and Wrighty show, or going to the overlap, the live debates. Like, how have you adapted styles for different sports and different things you've worked on throughout your career? Sorry for such a long-winded question.
Yeah, no. I think that's a really interesting question, because I think I'm at a stage now where I feel like if somebody employs me, they know what they're getting. So at the moment, I try and bring as much of myself and how I like to see things done to whatever it is I'm working on, whether that's Kelly and Wrighty or whether it's the live football or whether it's a corporate, you know, where you're in front of people who don't necessarily know you, but you think, well, if you've booked me, I kind of think, you know, somebody somewhere knows what they're getting. So I feel like I can do things more in my own way now. But yeah, definitely at Sky Sports News, it was very straight and scripted and down the camera. And even with interviews there, it was short, sharp, in theory. Bear in mind, this was very early on and this isn't always how I did it. But it was sort of short, sharp questions, 3-minute interviews, and then, you know, get things done. Same with sort of pitch side reporting, get your best questions in and really sharp to the point questions. Whereas there were other times on Sky Sports News, which is why it was such good grounding, that we're sort of filling airtime. So you'll get somebody on to talk about something and you think, do I have 15 minutes of me in this? And then do I have 15 minutes worth of questions? And then, so you're trying to kind of prolong things and ask nice, big, open-ended questions that give people time to answer, and lots of, just want to go back to that point you were making, or I just, you know, just to expand on this, or like lots of that kind of thing. So yeah, I think that's why that was such good grounding, because it had lots of different scenarios in it, also because we were very young and lots of people, obviously me included, made loads of mistakes, so we were all trying to cover for each other's mistakes all the time, which is really, really helpful. And yeah, and then I think, you know, there would be other things that I would work on that would be lighter toned. And I don't know, I think it's just about judging something when you go in and thinking, if I watch this, what do I expect from it? Do I expect somebody, if somebody's telling me the sports news, I want them to be a little bit more polished. Whereas if somebody's having an hour long conversational debate type show, I want them to be a bit more relaxed, and I want it to sound a bit more like a podcast, or I want it to sound a bit more as though everybody's involved and talking over each other. And that's a nice thing to do. So yeah, I think it's just about reading the situation and then trying to control it as much as you can. And often you can do that just by your own approach to it.
And again, I guess your experience has helped, as you just said, with Sky Sports News, the grounding you got there, going from 20-minute conversations to hard, straight down the lens or whatever. I guess that all helps. And yeah, so I then wanted to move on now to kind of your preparation. And I imagine going into conversational shows and live football and I guess everything, actually, you've got your prep. But how important is it to, a bit like, well, I mean, I try and do, but not very well, like reacting to what your guest or guests are saying. How important is that to just sometimes throw the prep out the window and just react?
I think so much of the prep that you do, you will find you don't use. It's there in case. You prepare for, for example, in a live game, it might be that, say Harry Kane's set to break Jimmy Greaves' record, you might have everything ready to go on that, and then he doesn't score. And you think, oh, well, that's all gone then. but you will then be able, if you do talk about him, to sort of fall back on a lot of that prep and maybe use it in a different way. I'm trying to think of a better example. But that's, you know, there's a strong case for the fact that the prep you do won't necessarily be useful, but it's just good to have, because then you can draw on it. So if somebody says, somebody goes off on a tangent, you can either step in, wrap it up and move on by using something that using sort of fact that you know or something. Let's say if somebody says, you know, oh, Spurs managed to win, I don't know, 5-0 and Harry Kane wasn't even on the score sheet. And you're like, oh, actually, we were going to talk about the defence. And you go, oh, yeah, but Harry Kane is set to, you know, break Jimmy Greaves' record. He's only one away from it, blah, blah, blah. But defensively, you know, the fact that they kept a clean sheet, well, you know, you can use it in different ways. So it's always helpful, but often you won't use it. And I feel I've used a really clumsy example there, but it's hard to explain something that you don't use and why you would have it.
it makes total sense. Like the reacting to the situation, like it's something that I spoke to Mark Pugach about, and he was just drumming in just how important it is just to listen yeah. and react, because otherwise you could miss just a nugget of gold. If you're just too focused on, right, what am I going to say next, you might miss something.
Yes. And I think the other thing I was just thinking on that, and because Pugas is fantastic and you couldn't get anyone else to give you advice any better than Pugas, because he's just brilliant. But I just think that in terms of that, I think going into an interview, particularly if it's into any interview situation, I think it's better to have areas you want to cover rather than specific questions. I think that works better, because then if somebody says something interesting, you're listening, and it's easier to remember a topic than it is to remember the specific wording of a question or a specific angle you might want to take, because that will change as the interview goes on.
Yeah, of course. And this is something, the next sort of topic I'd like to speak to you about is something that I think you spoke to Alison Bender a little bit about, but it's on body language. And I just found it so interesting listening to how you, when you're presenting, use your body language to either get more or less out of your pundits. And I kind of wanted you to explain that to me and anyone listening, of the art of using your body language to get more or less out of your guests.
Yeah, only in certain circumstances. But I think there's a lot to be said for looking really interested in what somebody's saying. You know, I think we can all do it socially. You know, there's a lot of times when your mind's on something else and somebody say, I'm not suggesting that the pundits are saying things that I'm not interested in, but in a social situation, for example, somebody can be saying something not very interesting and your mind's on what you're going to be doing later on, but you can still nod and smile and look like you're engaged in the conversation. In a professional sense, you're on air and you've got a producer and a DA and a director and whatever else the noise is that's going on, as well as trying to listen to that conversation. But you can't give the person that you're listening to the impression that you're listening to something else, because it's really distracting for them. If you've got somebody who's really experienced, they don't care. They just carry on with whatever it is that they're saying, and they're used to it. And they're like, I've got my answer. You crack on with what you've got to do, and I'll crack on with what I've got to do. But especially if you've got somebody who's not that experienced, it's really important that you, at least to them, look as though you're giving them your undivided attention, because that is, one, it's reassuring for them in terms of what they're saying. It's like a little micro reassurances all the way through. You're going, no, that's great. That's really interesting. That's, well, yes, I'm on board. I'm listening to what you're saying. But equally, when you're running out of time, like I have a thing where my hand just starts to come up really, really, really slowly, because you don't want to like slam a hand in someone's face and go, stop talking now. And then they just wrap up in like a split second in the middle of a sentence. But I just kind of go, and then if my hand gets up and they still don't talk, I start to kind of wave gently at them as though to say, please stop now. It's like, but you don't want to just, you know, cut somebody off in the middle of what they're saying.
Just to wrap up, I wanted to ask you just a couple of questions. I know we kind of talked before about how difficult it is to give advice, but just two last questions. One being, with kind of this new age of social media and TikTok and podcasts and all this these new formats of ways you can get into kind of the media, does that, basically what I'm trying to ask is, how can people use, the same way you broke into Sky Sports News when it was early and new, how can people use kind of the new changes in this industry, like the rise of social media, to benefit them going forward?
I think there's real opportunities for people to start up their own channels, whether it's podcast or YouTube or whatever that is. They're diminishing now because it's such a saturated market. So it's not how it was. You know, it used to be much easier when you started out. Everything took off because people were just desperate for more and more content. And now what you've got is more established media companies moving into that area as well. So there's a lot of there's a lot of competition in that now, I think. And look, this isn't my area at all, because this is something that's grown while I've been working. But I think the only way to do it now is to genuinely think to yourself what's missing that you would want to listen to or what you would want to watch. I think it's really hard to do that at the moment. But at the same time, don't be too off the wall with it, because football fans particularly don't like that. They do not like extreme. I've worked on many programs where they've tried to kind of reinvent stuff, and you're like, this doesn't work. People don't like it. They want what they want, how they want it. I think club channels are a really good way to get in, because usually people come into particularly football with that knowledge of one club that they followed and a working knowledge of the clubs around them. But sort of using that is a really good way to do it. I think that's probably a good way in. I suppose, sadly, in a way, that's sort of taken over from local newspapers, and, you know, sort of club channels is probably the equivalent of that now, which is a shame, but I think it might be the way it's going.
Yeah, so I know they're tricky questions, because, again, as we said earlier, you can't prep. You came in saying that I haven't prepped for this, because you can't. And yeah, yeah, tricky questions. But just to finish off is the question that I normally finish off with, which is just advice for aspiring sports broadcasters. What would you basically give?
I think it's the sort of combination of everything above, which is take every opportunity that you can. And do it really wholeheartedly. Do it take it with a really open mind. Work hard, be friendly, be nice to work with, and it will get you so far in your career. Just being somebody that other people want to work with will really help you. And your career will not be in a straight line. You won't, you know, your profile and your status won't grow in a straight line. So in those times when it might feel like it's stalling, it's really good to have friends and colleagues that you can sort of pick up the phone to or send a quick text to and say, is there any openings that you've heard of or anything like that? It's just keep all those lines open, which is really helpful. Again, it's like it's another cliche. It's once that first door opens, it's not too bad. Just get in somehow and do something, and once you're there, you'll see how all the possibilities, and especially when you're young, don't be scared to jump and change direction, because like there's a couple of situations where I was very comfortable in what I was doing, and just over the space of about a week went, I don't want to do this anymore, and walked in and left, and was like, oh, that's really terrifying. But equally, I knew at the time it was the right thing to do, and it's scary, but I think take a few chances, especially when you're young, because when you're older and you have different responsibilities, you can't take them anymore. You kind of get tied down to stuff. So take chances and take opportunities and travel and do all those things while you don't have anyone else relying on you. It's perfect.
Well, that's it for Series 3, Episode 5 with Kelly Cates. I hope you enjoyed the podcast episode, and make sure to like and subscribe, and I'll see you again soon.